Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Plattsville Church Podcast. My name is Tim, and I'm the lead pastor here at Plattsville Church, and we are so glad that you're joining us. Join us this Advent season as we look at the message of Jesus' birth through a number of popular Christmas carols. As always, to find out more about Plattsville Church, you can visit us online at www.plattsville.church. And if you'd like to connect with a pastor, you can send me an email at tim@pemchurch.ca or come join us in person every Sunday morning at 10 a.m. So enjoy this episode, and if there's something that connects with you, why don't you go ahead and share it with a friend.
Well, Christmas time is upon us. Clayton's finally got their act together and put up their Christmas tree this week. I was thinking it would be a good, you know, September 24th, activity, but Stephanie had other plans, so she made sure that we got the garlands up, the tree is up, the wreaths are out. The kids have pulled out their singing stockings. So, I mean, we're good to go, all right? This morning, we are starting a brand new Advent sermon series called Carols. And that's why we've kind of decorated for a front door, the idea of that we're all out kind of caroling together. And so each week we're going to examine a different Christmas carol, and today we're going to be talking about O Holy Night, the song O Holy Night, the last song that we sang in our worship set this morning. Before I start kind of dive into it, I'll give you some kind of trivia, some facts, some cool stories about the song O Holy Night. The song O Holy Night was written in about the mid-1800s. There was a parish priest, and his organ had just been refinished and renovated. And so to celebrate the brand new refinishing and renovation of the organ, he commissioned a local poet who also happened to be a wine merchant, and his name was Placide Capot. That's my best French accent. And I should get Fletch, he should come up here and give it to me. Yeah. Placide Capot. Now, what's interesting is Placide was not a Christian. In fact, most kind of accounts of who Placide was, being a wine merchant, might be kind of like in quotes, he was kind of not so, he was a little rough around the edges. And he was known for maybe indulging a little too much. But Placide was a poet in his local parish, and so this priest commissioned him, and he wrote this poem based on Luke chapter 2. That was kind of the assignment. And Placide liked it so much that he actually got his friend, who was also not a Christian, to write the music to the poem. And so it became O Holy Night. And this song just took off in the Roman Catholic Church. Everybody loved it. It became super popular. Everyone was playing it everywhere until someone realized who wrote the song. And they're like, this is Placide, man. You can't be singing songs in church that this guy wrote. You don't know who this is. And they tried to kind of stamp it out, but it was already happening, all right? Like it was everybody's favorite, and so they were continuing to sing it. And another interesting fact, this is kind of the Canadian fact to bring it home. It happened in Pittsburgh, but it was a Canadian. A 33-year-old Canadian professor, his name was Reginald Fessenden. In 1906, he was a professor, so he was in Pittsburgh working, but he was a Canadian. He did something that most people considered to be impossible. He took, in his own garage, he took a makeshift generator, he plugged a microphone into it, and he broadcast the very first AM broadcast in the history of the world. And that was on Christmas Eve, 1906. And on Christmas Eve, 1906, he took the Bible and he opened it to Luke chapter 2. And he started with verse 1 and he just began to read. In those days, Caesar Augustus issued a decree that a census would be taken of the entire Roman world. And he just read the whole chapter, the whole Christmas story. And then after he was done that, he picked up his violin and he played O Holy Night. And so O Holy Night is the very first song to ever be played over radio transmissions. It's the very first song, and it was a Canadian. I don't know about you, but as you are getting ready for the Christmas season, we're going to talk a little bit about, gearing towards, obviously, the manger. And the song, Oh Holy Night, talks about, you know, it talks about the angels, and it talks about, you know, Mary and Joseph and the wise men. And it, you know, it's this Oh Holy Night. And I don't know about you, but like, we've got a couple manger sets, like manger scene sets at our house. Like, we've got like the Precious Moments set that, like, you know, all the little cute kids playing all the little roles. We've even got like the Fisher-Price Little People set. All right, like, so, you know, and you push the top of it and it sings. And I don't know about you, but I have a feeling that all of our kind of cute, whimsical Christmas manger sets have probably given us a kind of glossy, idealized view of what was going on that holy night. I bet you, if you were to see and witness that holy night firsthand, probably holy and divine was probably not the first words that would come to your mind. In fact, if we actually think about it, the reality is that there was this pregnant teenage girl who wasn't married when she got pregnant with her newly found fiancé, making their way, by all estimates, somewhere between 130 to 200 kilometers on the back of a donkey, 9 months pregnant. Now, I don't know about you, but I drove Steph to the hospital in a Toyota Corolla, and that was rough enough. I cannot imagine what 130 kilometers on the back of a donkey would have been like. And then they get there, and there's no room in the inn. And so they go, and they get put in this stable. And it's not like a barn that we might think of today. By all accounts, it's probably something that resembled a cave. And it's where the animals would have just kind of taken shelter. And so here in the hay, with the animals, with the smells, with everything that's laying around on the ground. Last night at the parade, Luke Anderson had the privilege of being pooped on by the donkey. Everything that was laying around in this stable, this cave, and again, a teenage girl. Her mom wasn't there, the midwife wasn't there. The only person there was her new fiance, and as a dad, let me tell you, we are next to useless in that moment. And there she gave birth in the most unsterile, worst environment that we could probably imagine. But this song, O Holy Night, it has these two lines in it that I want to talk about this morning. It says this: a thrill of hope, the weary world rejoices, for yonder breaks a new and glorious morn. I don't know about you, but sometimes I think there's probably no more better description than a weary world. I mean, yes, Christmas is great, and we've got the lights up and the trees up, and we're getting excited. We're out purchasing gifts. But underneath that excitement, more often than not, in many of our lives, there is a weariness. A weariness that life has dealt us in these very difficult situations. And for whatever reason, Christmas kind of comes that lightning rod, that point, that focal point where it brings us to remember again those things, those weary things. And I imagine for you, there are people in this crowd that maybe this holiday season is everything but joyful. It's a weariness. Maybe it's the loss of someone who is close to you in your life. And this will be the first Christmas without that person. Maybe it's the loss of a relationship. You know, there's one less person around the Christmas table this year. Maybe it's the loss of a job and you're out spending money on gifts that you know you have no way to pay for when the bill comes in January. There's a weariness that can so often be a part of our lives. But it says, in the midst of a weary world, there is a thrill of hope. What an interesting way of putting that, a thrill of hope. I don't know if you know this, but we are hope creatures. We as human beings, we are geared towards hope. It's a part of us. Someone once said, you know, the reality is we could live without food for 40 days. We could live without water for 8 days. We could even live without oxygen for 4 minutes. But a few seconds without hope is all it takes for some people to stop living. See, we are geared towards hope. We're hope creatures. If you don't believe me, think of it like this. If I were to offer two people the same job, a very, you know, menial task, you know, something that just, you know, counting rice grains in a rice bag or something ridiculous that just, you know, nobody wants to do, nobody, it's just, you know, there's no point to it or whatever. And you brought in two people, same circumstance, same life circumstance, you know, same age, same demographic, whatever it may be. And to one of them you said, at the end of this, you're going to count rice grains or whatever the menial task is for a year. And at the end of the year, I'm going to pay you $10,000. And to the other one you said, I want you to do the same task exactly the same way, but at the end of this year, I'm going to pay you $10 million. What you would find is as those two people would do this same task, they would get the same kind of discouragement. There would be days in which, oh man, why am I doing this? What does this have to do with my life? But what you would immediately find is that the person who's being paid $10,000 at the end of the year or promised $10,000 at the end of the year would begin to wonder, is it worth it? Why am I doing this? They would bring themselves to the brink of, am I going to quit? You know, what's the point? Why am I doing this? But the person who you've promised $10 million to, see, there's a resilience within them to keep on going. Why? Because there is a hope of what the $10 million, what a future is going to look like as a result of this task. See, with hope, we are able to get through what otherwise would totally be demoralizing, discouraging, or even sometimes crushing. The writer of Hebrews puts it this way. Hebrews 10, chapter 10, verse 23 says, let us hold tightly without wavering to the hope we affirm, for God can be trusted to keep his promise. Let us hold tightly to the hope we affirm. I wonder how many of us that describe sometimes our lives. Our lives are going, it's going crazy. Things are not going the way we want. This holiday season is not panning out the way we thought it would. We're experiencing immense loss. We're experiencing a weariness, but we are just holding on for dear life to the hope. And so the question probably should be asked, well, what is this hope? What is this hope that we are holding on to? And the author of Hebrews actually explains it quite explicitly in the passage that becomes, and it is simply this, that Jesus has come, that God in heaven, where we might be tempted to think of God as somewhere other, somewhere judging, somewhere, you know, the cosmic policeman, somewhere else, he has actually come and inhabited our world as a person. And his name is Jesus. And that person, Jesus, being both God and man, stands as kind of the bridge between God and us. And through his act, his life here on earth, his teachings, through his death on the cross, and through his resurrection, We are given an opportunity to experience God with us. See, that's the gospel message, that it's not about you and me and how good we are. It's not about what we can do. It's not about a God who just sits in the distance and, you know, at the end of our life, we're just hoping that somehow the good and the bad kind of work itself out in the cosmic scales of justice. No, the gospel message is that it actually has nothing to do with you and me. What it has to do with is the fact that God, of his own will and initiation, comes to earth so that we may experience relationship with him. And then not only does he make a way for us, but the writer of Hebrews says he would never then leave us alone. Because when he, Jesus, went back to heaven, it says God's very spirit came. And in fact, the metaphor, which we probably don't have time to get into, is about the temple. It was this place of just absolute holy, sacred, divine reality. And if someone were to enter the temple, the very presence of God, with just a minor speck, we're not talking about moral failure, even just a corruption of their clothes. It was just, they'd be struck down. And this holiness, this sacredness, this divine reality, this presence, when Jesus dies, comes pouring out of the temple. And it says in Hebrews, is now available to you and to me, so that we might experience a life filled by his Spirit. See, our hope is not in some other place. See, lots of religious movements, lots of ideas about God have ended with kind of this other heaven spirituality. Lots of ideas, you know, we talk, and when you talk to people, you'll hear this kind of idea of, well, I think there's kind of like a spiritual reality beyond. And maybe we'll go and we'll join that. And we'll be a part of kind of this cosmic energy. Well, here's the problem. I don't know if you know it, but our deepest need is to be loved. And love requires two people making a choice towards one another. And so if we are going to go and just kind of be enveloped in this cosmic energy, there's no self there. There's no choice there. And so there's no love there. See, heaven is about the fact that we get to experience ourselves remade and reborn, choosing and experiencing love in and amongst one another. Maybe it's, as you've thought about spirituality, you've never even come to this spiritual. Maybe you're just living out the scene from The Lion King, where Mufasa turns to his son and goes, "It's the circle of life." You know, it's hey, listen, Simba, it's bad that we, I know, it's kind of a little bit bloody. You know, we eat the antelope, we attack them, but they feed us. And then what happens, it's okay because, you know, we die and our bodies fertilize the ground and then the grass grows and the antelope eat the grass and then we eat the antelope. It's the circle of life. It's all good. You're just a part of this kind of cosmic circle. And again, we are left with this reality. Where's the self? Where's the choice? Where's the love? See, our hope is not in this other, this energy, this outsideness to ourselves. Our hope comes from a very specific person. And as I may have given it away when we were singing, it's our living hope of Jesus. That's our hope. It's a person. And see, What's more amazing is that our afterlife, our beyond, our hope of what's to come is not this spiritual other. Because if I might take a little bit of a rabbit trail, there is an inevitable loss to our life. I don't know if you know that. Each and every one of us will experience inevitable loss within our lives. You know, I think of even when I was a teenager, when I was in university, there's an inevitable loss even just in the idea of picking a major. Because when you define that this is what you want to do with your life, you're kind of striking out a bunch of other stuff that you're not going to do. Right? There's some things that I can't do. I don't carry the certificate. I don't carry the skills required. You know, when I chose my route, and I liked what I chose and what I've ended up doing with my life, but it kind of took some things off the table. And sometimes that's a positive, proactive choice, but sometimes it's not. You know, even as a young person, maybe you're thinking, listen, there are some opportunities that have gone by that I've missed. And I think those of us that are even a little bit older, some of us even parents especially, you know, you have that phrase, oh man, they grow up so fast. It's born out of this idea, listen, there are times that I want to get back with my kids, and I can't. I think as we get older, we recognize, and there are some of you who have probably lived this pain, that there are opportunities that have passed you by. There's an irreversibility of life, that the moment is gone when it's gone. Not only that, is there are people that we lose, people that, relationships that are destroyed and broken, people that die and are gone. And even there are places that are lost, places that you can't get back to, places that are destroyed. Steph's family, her grandparents used to live right on Lake Nipissing in North Bay. And I remember when they retired and they were looking to downsize, it was a big deal for the whole family that grandma and grandpa were going to sell this house. Because this house had been the gathering point of family. Every Christmas, everybody had always gathered at grandma and grandpa's on the shores of Lake Nipissing. But that place is gone. I mean, it still exists, but it's not ours anymore. There's no connection to it anymore. See, things are inevitably going by. But see, here's the thing. The hope of the gospel, and this is where I want to kind of bring it back around. The hope of the gospel is not in a consolation heaven. It's not in a consolation prize. Do you know that? I think sometimes we think about hope and eternity and this idea that, listen, I know life is bad now, but one day I will get rewarded. I will get something that's better or different. I'll get to heaven and there'll be other people. There'll be, you know, kind of like more riches or you know, this other. And we get stuck in this idea that heaven is somehow this consolation prize. But actually, it says in the Bible that our hope is not in a consolation prize. Our hope is in something called redemption and restoration. And those are big words, but what it simply means is that we believe when Jesus comes again, he's going to create a new heaven and a new earth. And we will live on that new earth with him. And so everything that we have lost will be replaced, not as a consolation prize, but will actually be reborn better than we ever had it. The bodies that we have that are slowly decaying, the bodies that have let us down, the bodies that we maybe never, ever even had because from birth they were defective, those bodies are reborn, recreated. And we get to enjoy as we were meant to. Relationships that maybe we never even had or never knew. Relationships with parents or children that we never had or never knew are reborn and redeveloped that we may experience life to the fullest. Maybe it's a relationship with God. A relationship with God that you've been saying, listen, you know, I've been struggling and I've been turning my wheels and I've been trying to do this thing and it seems like such work and such just, But when we get to heaven, we will experience God in all his glory standing before us and we will simply bow down and worship, experiencing a relationship with God like never before. See, heaven isn't a consolation prize. It's a restoration of what we have, but better than we ever even knew. See, our hope, that means our hope is here and now. That as the writer of Hebrews said, we are called to hold on to hope. And so our question this morning is simply that. What have you been holding on to? What has been your hope? Has your hope been that one day you will get to experience life with Jesus? Has your hope been that relationship with God? Or has your hope been displaced? Has your hope been in your finances? Has your hope been in the stock market? Has your hope been in your job or in your career? Has your hope been in a new relationship that could be formed? Has your hope been in a government or a policy? Has your hope been in a new life circumstance? If only it were different, then it would be better. Of course it would. It'd be different. But we would still be the same. Is our hope in Jesus? See, our call this morning is simply that. Holding on to the hope that we profess. Hebrews 10, chapter 23. Chapter 10, verse 23. Let us hold tightly without wavering to the hope we affirm. For God can be trusted to keep his promises. Will you pray with me? Father, this idea of hope sometimes seems so elusive, this concept that we are obviously hardwired for. Everything within us desires something. It desires something new. The newest technology, the newest government, the newest policy, the newest house, the newest stock, the newest job, the newest relationship. There's something within us that is hardwired for hope. But the question this morning is, what are we holding on to? And the answer, Father, we are praying, may it be you. May we hold on to the hope that we now profess, that the gospel message is that one day you will come again and restore and redeem everything that we have, that we may experience life not simply as a consolation prize, but life as it was meant to be. May we hold on to the hope. And so we take a moment and we examine our hearts and our lives. And if we find an area that is not in alignment, we pray, God, may you remove those false hopes. May you allow us the clarity to focus on you. And right now, we make the choice, the declaration to say, our hope is in you. Because we know your promises are always yes and amen, which simply means your promises are always true. In your holy, holy name. Amen.